When we see a magnificent structure, like the Eiffel Tower, we may ask ourselves, who is the genius behind this incredible work of beauty? Who was the mastermind behind this? What was he like? We're intrigued. We want to know more about the creator of this splendid edifice. This evening, I want us to consider the works of the creator of the universe. Yahweh commanded Job to stand still and consider the wondrous works of God. Even though he's a righteous man, Job needed this experience. He needed to stand still and consider the works of God. If Job needed that experience, we need it even more today. Sometimes we need to stop and stand still and consider the greatness of God's power. For as Job tells us, his power is beyond our comprehension. But the created world teaches us something about the Creator. It intrigues us and makes us start asking questions. Who was the master artist behind all this beauty? What is he like? So let's sit back and consider the wondrous works of God. No falling asleep. The psalmist said, "The heavens declare or speak forth the glory of God." The brilliant, radiant beauty, the splendor, the magnificence of God. Every night, the stars testify about the knowledge of who God is. In Romans 1:20, we read, "From the time the world was created, people have seen the earth and sky and all that God made. They can clearly see his invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, so they have no excuse whatsoever for not knowing God." Every person is without excuse for not knowing God. The created world is a living testimony that there is a creator, for his eternal power and divine nature can be seen through his creation. You see, in the beginning, God. You see, this universe we know has not always existed. It had a beginning, and that beginning was God. Paul wrote, "For by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible. All things were created by him and for him." John the Revelator wrote, "Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created." The universe was created for God's pleasure, and what an immense and amazing universe it is. I love Isaiah. I think Isaiah was one of those prophets who was privileged to see amazing glimpses into the universe. Living in a day and age when most people thought the earth was flat and stars circled the earth, Isaiah displayed incredible knowledge of the universe, far and above anything the science of that day understood. Isaiah said that God stretched out the heavens. Scientists today use the same words to describe how the universe is expanding. It is literally being stretched out. And what a vast universe it is. The earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Here's a picture of Earth, Jupiter, and Mars as they appear in the sky from Mars. Just a tiny twinkle in the sky is our planet. And here's a picture of Earth taken by a satellite orbiting Saturn. Just a tiny little blue dot in the vastness of the universe. This kind of gives us a perspective of how small we are, even in our own solar system. Distance in the universe is measured in terms of how fast light travels. Did you know that light from the sun takes 8 minutes to reach the Earth? So if you're looking at the sun, you're looking at how the sun appeared 8 minutes ago. A light year is the distance that light travels in the course of a year. That's about 6 trillion miles. Here's our interstellar neighborhood. The stars that are closest to us, to our own sun. The closest one is Alpha Centauri, and it takes light 4 years to travel from there to us. That's 24 trillion miles. We live in a galaxy of stars called the Milky Way Galaxy. What's a galaxy? It's just a collection of stars. Galaxies contain between 100 billion and 1 trillion stars. Our galaxy is 100,000 light years across. Our planet circles one of the 300 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy. Our Milky Way is part of a local group of galaxies that is 10 million years, light years, in size. Our local group of galaxies is part of what's called the Virgo supercluster, which is 110 million light years in size. This slide shows all the superclusters in our little corner of the universe, 1 billion light years across. That's about 5% of the universe. Now take a look at the entire universe, 93 billion light years across. Now these aren't stars we're looking at. These aren't even galaxies of stars. These are superclusters of galaxies. Our supercluster, the Virgo supercluster, is there in the middle. The Milky Way galaxy is just a pixel of light in that supercluster. It's such a vast universe. Just to give you an idea of how much empty space there is in this universe, if you went down to the Jacksonville Arena and placed 3 grains of sand in the arena, each of those sands representing a star, that represents how much empty space there is between the stars in our universe. Like 3 grains of sand in the arena. Look at this picture. It's from the Hubble telescope. They took the Hubble telescope and pointed it to what appeared to be a dark, empty section of the sky. It's just a tiny sliver of the sky, only 2 microns across. What's that mean? Well, if you went out tonight with a soda straw that was 8.5 feet long and looked through that long straw, that tiny sliver of the sky that you'd be seeing is what we're talking about. In that tiny section of sky, there are 10,000 galaxies. So here we have 10,000 galaxies, each with between 100 billion to a trillion stars. We can't even comprehend the greatness of God's power. Scientists now tell us that there are 125 billion galaxies in the universe. If President Obama puts you in charge of naming each galaxy, and he gave you exactly 1 second to think up each name, and if he gave you some vitamins that allowed you to work 24 hours a day with no rest, day and night, and all you did those 24 hours a day was name galaxies, one every second, then it would take you 1.5 million years just to name the galaxies. And remember, there's 100 billion to a trillion stars in each one of those galaxies. And yet God has a name for every galaxy, every star. God stretched out the heavens. Scientists tell us if the expansion had been a little bit faster, things would have flown apart. And if it had been a little bit slower, then it all would have collapsed back down upon itself. It's expanding at just the right rate. Now let's talk for a minute about just how finely tuned this rate of expansion is. Let's talk about how precise this rate has been tuned. The accuracy is plus or minus 10 to the negative 17th power. Well, how do we understand that? Suppose you set the cruise control on your car, on your vehicle, to 60 miles per hour. And you set a timer in your car to travel for exactly 40 years and then stop. So you set the cruise control and you travel for 40 years. And we'll assume there's a highway that encircles the world with bridges over the oceans. So after 40 years, You've traveled around the world 800 times. You've traveled exactly 21,024,000 miles. When you stop, you are off the mark by more than 15 microns. That's the width of one human hair. If you're off by more than the width of a human hair, then your timing was not accurate enough. Your speed, when you stopped, was not accurate enough. That's how accurately balanced the expansion of the universe is. Just a tiny, tiny fraction higher, and it would have flown apart. Just a tiny, tiny fraction lower, and it would have all collapsed back in on itself. It is perfectly balanced. Stephen Hawking, the most prominent scientist alive today, is either an atheist or an agnostic. He chooses not to believe in God. He believes that nothing made the universe, that this vast, finely tuned work of art simply appeared out of nothing. It's the height of ignorance. But look at what he wrote. He writes, "The initial state of the universe must have been very carefully chosen, indeed. It would be very difficult to explain why the universe should have begun in just this way, except as the act of a god who intended to create beings like us." The universe is so finely tuned that even an atheist is forced to admit that an intelligence was involved. In Psalm 147, it says he determines the number of the stars and calls them each by name. There are 125 billion galaxies, each holding up to a trillion stars. Scientists estimate that there are 100 septillion stars in the universe, and God calls them each by name. Did you know that the largest computer database in the world can hold around 2 petabytes of data? That's enough space to store about 100 trillion names. That's not even 1% of the names of the stars in this universe. That's only about the number of names you can get for one galaxy. Are we alone in this vast universe? We would be naive to think we're the only intelligent life in the universe. Now, at the same time, I don't believe in UFOs, Klingons, or ETs. I find it very interesting that UFOs are never observed leaving this planet in outer space or coming to this planet from outer space. They're only observed in our atmosphere. And why is that? Kind of makes me think they live here with us. I also find it interesting that when people have a personal encounter with a UFO or with alien beings, they experience the same phenomena that people have experienced for thousands of years when they encounter evil spirits. I also find it interesting that although thousands have claimed to have been abducted by aliens, no born-again Christian has ever been abducted by aliens. You know what those three facts tell me? The UFO phenomena is a modern face on an ancient charade. It's the devil's attempt to trick and deceive our world in the last days. But the question remains, are there other beings in the universe? In Job 1:6, we find the sons of God came to appear in heaven before Yahweh. This is a term in the Old Testament that's only used for humans. Could it be that there are other nations out there in this vast universe, and that they send their leaders or representatives to meet with God? In 1 Corinthians 4:9, Paul said that we are a theatron, both to angels and to men. A theatron is the Greek word for a theater. Our planet is a theater for the universe. Now here's a galaxy like our own, approximately 200 billion stars in it. Listen to what Isaiah wrote. Surely the nations are like a drop in a bucket. They are regarded as dust on the scales. The word nations is a reference to the entire population of this earth. You recall that Jesus told his disciples to go into all nations. It means all the people of this earth, the nations. If you add up all the people on this earth, all 6.8 billion of us, we are only a drop in the bucket in this vast universe. If you put all of the people of this earth upon the scales, we wouldn't even move the scales. It would only be like putting dust upon the scales. It wouldn't even move the scales compared to all the intelligent life in this universe. We're a drop in the bucket, a piece of dust on the scales. David declared in Psalm 8, "When I consider thy heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars, which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him?" In this vast universe, how could God be mindful of us? Surely he has other things on his mind. But it's amazing that he sent his only begotten Son to die for this one lost world. The universe is beyond comprehension. Atheists and agnostics are bewildered by it. Robert Jastrow, NASA scientist and agnostic, he wrote, "The universe flashed into being and we cannot find out what caused that to happen. This is a distressing result for scientists." It's distressing to atheists and agnostics because the only possible explanation is a God who lives outside of space and time. Did you know time had a beginning? 2,000 years ago, Paul understood time had a beginning. Scientists never believed that until the past 100 years, when Einstein's theory of relativity confirmed that space and time both had a beginning. Not only was the expansion fine-tuned, gravity is also fine-tuned. If gravity was slightly stronger, stars would burn too rapidly and inconsistently to support life. The fluctuations in the intensity of their burning would result in huge temperature variations in their solar systems, and life could not survive. What if gravity was weaker? Scientists believe life would not have survived. Gravity has to be fine-tuned in order for human life to exist in our universe. Now, how hard is it to be this precise? It's hard to visualize how fine this tuning is, but here's an analogy. Cover the entire world in dimes, all the way up to the moon, a height of about 240,000 miles. Can you imagine that many dimes covering the Earth all the way up to the height of the moon? That's a lot of dimes. That's about how much federal debt we have. Now, suppose each of the 6 billion people on Earth have 8 of their own worlds, like ours. That makes 48 billion worlds. And now we pile dimes on those 48 billion worlds. We pile them as high as the moon. Now, paint one of those dimes red and mix it into the 48 billion piles of dimes on these worlds. Then blindfold a friend and ask him to go to any of those 48 billion worlds and reach into those huge piles of dimes and pick out one. The odds that he will pick the red dime the first time are the same odds as the fine-tuning of gravity in our universe. And the mass of the universe was also fine-tuned. If the universe had 1/1,000,000th of a percent more or less mass, no stars or planets or galaxies would have existed. More mass, and the universe would have collapsed back on itself after creation. Less mass, and the universe would have expanded so rapidly that life could not exist. The mass of the universe is so finely tuned, it would be like designing the Earth to such an exact weight that adding one grain of sand would make it too heavy, or removing one grain of sand from the Earth would make it too light. That's just how precise the mass of the universe is calculated. You know, the design of this universe is so apparent that it makes you wonder, how can they teach evolution in our schools? Astrophysicist Paul Davies wrote, "It seems as though somebody has fine-tuned nature's numbers to make the universe. The impression of design is overwhelming." But it's not only the design of the universe that is fine-tuned by our Creator. This is a photograph of our planet, beautiful planet, taken by the Apollo astronauts. Back in Bible times, when people thought the Earth was flat, Isaiah in chapter 42:20-22 spoke of God sitting upon the circle of the Earth. The Bible says that God created the Earth. God was personally involved in the design of the Earth and in its life forms. God fine-tuned his design of our planet so that life, and so that we could thrive on it. This is a view of a typical spiral galaxy. Note the spiral arms, which are caused by the rotation of the entire galaxy. Our galaxy, the Milky Way, is a spiral galaxy. This is the view of our Milky Way galaxy as it would appear on edge. The mass, the white masses you see are stars. Our galaxy has about 200 billion or more stars. And our solar system is located near the edge of the galaxy in a relatively unpopulated region between spiral arms. We live in a rural area of the galaxy, if you want to think of it that way. This is lucky for us for several reasons. First of all, this region gives us an excellent view of our galaxy and the universe. We're unobstructed by the many stars found in the more crowded parts of the galaxy. It almost appears as if God has allowed us the best possible location for us to see how the heavens declare the glory of God. More importantly, this is the only region of the galaxy where life can survive. If we were too close to the center of the galaxy, we'd be susceptible to radiation because of the large number of stars. The distance between a planet and its star has to be fine-tuned in order for life to be able to exist. This life zone is a very small zone in which water can exist in all three of its forms: gas, liquid, and solid ice. Without liquid water, life is not possible. If the planet is too far from the sun, then liquid water will not exist because of cold temperatures. If the planet is too close to its sun, then liquid water will not exist because of high temperatures. The size of a sun is also crucial to support life. Large stars undergo rapid and unstable burning with extreme temperature variations, which is not conducive to life. Stars smaller than our sun are also not suitable to support life on planets. Sir Francis Crick, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering DNA, is an atheist, and he is quoted as saying, "The origin of life appears to be almost a miracle." It's hard for an atheist to fathom it, isn't it? Almost. Almost a miracle. Another unique aspect of our solar system is that Earth is protected from comet bombardment by two huge gas planets, Jupiter and Saturn. Now, this picture is not to scale. Actually, Jupiter is more than 10,000 times as large as Earth. Scientists estimate that the Earth would receive 1,000 times as many comet impacts if these planets were not where they are. Such a large number of comet collisions would prevent the existence of life on Earth. Jupiter and Saturn, because of their huge size and high gravity pull, reduce the chance of major comet collisions with our Earth. Now, what about the Moon? Not only has the Earth been fine-tuned to allow for the existence of life, the Moon has been specially created to allow life to exist on Earth. The presence of the Moon is absolutely vital to Earth's ability to host life. Without the Moon, the Earth would be a barren, scorched planet similar to Venus. Why does the Earth need the Moon in order to host life? The Moon slows down the rotation of the Earth. Without the Moon, Earth would rotate on its axis every 8 hours. Such a rapid rotational period would lead to winds in excess of 500 miles per hour, unsuitable for advanced life forms. Astronomer Robert Nye explains just how unlikely all these events were. He says, on Earth, a long sequence of improbable events transpired in just the right way to bring forth our existence, as if we had won a $1 million lottery a million times in a row. Do you know how improbable it is to win the lottery? And then imagine the odds of winning it a million times in a row. Here's another one, the Earth's magnetic field. The magnetic field produces the Van Allen radiation shield, which protects the Earth from radiation bombardment from space. If this shield was not present, life would not be possible on Earth. The Van Allen radiation shield is a design unique to the Earth. None of the other planets in our solar system have a shield even 1% as strong as Earth's. But if the Earth's magnetic field was too large, then we would experience much more violent electric storms. Well, to this point, we've only discussed a few of the features of the universe and Earth that had to be fine-tuned in order to allow for the possibility of life. Actually, scientists have discovered over 200 factors that were carefully designed to support life. Here are some of the fine-tuning factors. The galaxy type. For instance, only a spiral-type galaxy like our Milky Way can support life. About 5 or 10% of the galaxies in our universe are spiral galaxies, so the probability of any particular galaxy being spiral is about 1 in 10. And you can see some of the other factors here. Here are some more factors to consider and their odds. Axis tilt is one of them. If the tilt of the rotation axis was too large, then there would be huge temperature variations on this planet. If it were not enough, then we would lose the seasons. Here's a number of other factors to consider. We won't go through them all, but consider the thickness of the crust. If it was thicker, we would lose too much oxygen. If it was thinner, there would be too many earthquakes. Consider all these factors and add them all up, and the total probability of this happening is just about as close to zero as you can get. It would be like someone flying around the Earth in an airplane, and they drop out of the airplane a single grain of sand, and you need to find it. It might be on the Jacksonville beach, or it may be on the St. Augustine beach, or the Miami beach, or on any other beach in the world. It may be on Brazil beach or Australian beach. And you're free to roam the world and bring back one grain of sand. Your odds of picking the right grain of sand are the same as the odds of any planet existing anywhere in the universe capable of supporting intelligent life. Fred Hoyle is an outspoken atheist who can never bring himself to admit that there is a creator. Fred Hoyle writes, though, a super intellect has monkeyed with physics as well as with chemistry and biology. A super intellect, unnamed. Speaking of the odds that life could have arisen by chance, atheist Fred Hoyle writes, "What are the chances that a tornado might blow through a junkyard containing all the parts of a 747? That's, by the way, about 500,000 pieces in a 747 jet. What are the chances a tornado blow through a junkyard containing all the parts of a 747, accidentally assemble them into a plane, and leave it ready for takeoff? The possibilities are so small as to be negligible, even if a tornado were to blow through the junkyard, or through enough junkyards to fill the whole universe." Hoyle refused to believe in God, but he recognized the insurmountable odds of life arising by natural means. He spent his life avoiding God. He spent his life searching for an explanation that excluded God, and he died without ever finding an answer, always learning but never able to come to a knowledge of the truth. David wrote in the 8th Psalm, "When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, the son of man that you care for him?" When David looked up at the night sky 3,000 years ago, he was overwhelmed with the glory of God. Today, with all our fancy telescopes, we can see much more than David. Our galaxy is a speck of dust in the universe. Our solar system, a speck of dust in our Milky Way galaxy. And yet God, the creator of it all, loves us enough to send his only son to die for us. As we close today, looking at the Butterfly Nebula, I have 3 closing comments. Number 1, I hope we all have a greater appreciation for just how awesome our God is. As we look here at the beautiful Crab Nebula, we can see the master artist at work. My second point is, I hope we can use this information in a way to talk with atheists and agnostics. You know, when I was growing up, I never knew an atheist or an agnostic. Today, the world's changed. After being fed a diet of evolution, many young people, adults, are growing up as atheists, agnostics. By showing the design of the universe, we can introduce these people to the designer. As we look at the Spirograph Nebula, my third point is, I hope the beauties of the universe cause us to long for eternity. We can only see a tiny little bit of the universe from our vantage point here. In the eternal kingdom, we may have the privilege of traveling and exploring throughout this vast universe. Our minds can't even begin to conceive of all the wonders out there in the universe for us to explore throughout eternity. You know, the eternal kingdom isn't going to be dull or boring. If we visited a new galaxy once a year, it'd take us 125 billion years to visit them all. I'm going to close with this Bible verse in 1 Corinthians 2:9. "Eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him." Or, as it says in the Message Bible, no one's ever seen or heard anything like this. Never so much as imagined anything quite like it. What God has arranged for those who love Him.